Welcome to Knowledge Cast. This is a look into the world of knowledge management, information management, data management, and everything in between. This is brought to you by Enterprise Knowledge. I'm Zach Wall, founder and CEO of EK. Today, we're speaking with Dana Tessier. Dana is the Director of Knowledge Management at Shopify, a very cool organization. Dana, welcome.
Thanks, Zach. Excited to be here.
Really happy to have you. Dana, if you've listened before, you will know that I always like to lead off by asking our guests to give their own definition of knowledge management. How do you explain this highly varied field to the unindoctrinated?
Yeah, I think it's a great question to start off with. Often when I, you know, introduce myself at parties, when we still went to parties, people would say, you know, what is that? And then when I would finish describing it, they'd often say, wow, I wish we had someone like you at our organization, right? So I define knowledge management as how an organization identifies, captures, shares, and uses knowledge to improve their overall effectiveness in relation to their business priorities.
Awesome. You know, it's funny, when I say what I do at parties or when I used to, people would just kind of say, cool, I'm going to go get another drink now. Nice speaking with you. It's kind of a conversation killer, but maybe you're better at it than I am. So I love the fact that you've got the word effectiveness in there. So talk to me more about this. From your definition, is knowledge management all about making business just work better?
Yeah, exactly. You don't manage knowledge for knowledge's sake, right? It's it's about the people that are engaging in these activities and that are trying to realize the mission of your organization. So it's all about making things better, more effective, improving customer satisfaction. There has to be some kind of North Star to guide your activities to make all of the efforts and activities worth it.
Awesome. So I'd love for you to share a little bit about how you got into the field. And a lot of times what we hear are these very circuitous routes that people have taken. They've sort of stumbled into it. My sense is your path might have been a little bit more deliberate. You've got a background in this. This is your area of expertise. Why don't you tell us about that?
There is some serendipity. There was some stumbling, and then it kind of turned deliberate a little bit, I guess. So when I was a student, I worked at a very small company in their operations team, and I was going to school for technical writing and literature at the time, and we had no documented processes. So being the kind of eager student that I was, I said, hey, can I write down our processes and make a training? It was a binder. Like, we printed these things and put them in a binder back then. And they said, fine, stop talking. You can write it, like, whatever. No one was that excited about it. But then that led to training the new people that we hired. Mm. And it led to building out quality assurance and process improvement. And being in a small organization, as you're scaling, you get to wear so many different hats. So I just took advantage of all those learning opportunities. And when we hired a new VP of operations, he said to me, oh, what you do is knowledge management. And I thought he had made it up. I'd never heard of this term before. I told him, I'm like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And he said, I think you should Google it. So I did. And bless Google AdWords, because I noticed that I was a 15-minute walk away from McGill University, and they had a knowledge management program as part of their information science master's. That's where things started to align. And I realized, like, oh, this is my thing and I'm going to pursue this. So I did my master's, but I worked at the same time. So it was such a great opportunity to just, you know, learn something in the morning, come to work in the afternoon and try it out. It was like a great learning opportunity the whole way through.
You know, I've got a remark on this. You said something that feels so familiar to so many of the folks that we talk about who have been successful in the field. Nobody really asked you to do this. You kind of saw a need and you just filled the gap. You took it. And I find that the most successful people in knowledge management have just done that. They've just said, there's a problem here that needs to be solved. I don't know what it's called. Frankly, I don't care what it's called. I just need to fix it.
Absolutely.
So, well done. And I think that speaks to one of the traits to what makes somebody in the KM field successful. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about your career path? So you went to McGill, a wonderful program, by the way, one of the best in the world. How did you find your way to Shopify?
Yeah, that's also a moment of serendipity. So through my previous organization, we started doing some work in the Philippines. I got to go there, which was really this whole experience of like exporting knowledge and importing knowledge. And it was a really wonderful experience to work out there with all those folks. But I did find myself working nights in the Philippines, which is daytime here. And that did get a little bit rough after a while. And I was coming home on a plane to Ottawa to visit my family for the holidays. And I happened to sit next to a person who was in the process of talking to Shopify about their contact center operations and what they needed to scale. And I asked him, oh, what do they do for knowledge management? Just because, you know, obviously with my background, I was curious to know. We just started chatting. And one thing turned to another, and he introduced me to the leaders at Shopify. And we had a great conversation, which turned into a full-time opportunity to build out their knowledge management efforts from the ground up.
Yep, that's how it's done, right? That's all it takes.
Yeah.
So what are you doing there now? What are the big programs or the big efforts that are occupying your time at Shopify?
Yeah, it's been a really hectic but wonderful time for us. When the pandemic hit, we made the decision to go remote for all our operations and to start really expanding our global hiring strategy. So when I joined Shopify in 2015 for support, support was the first organization that went remote back then in order to scale and to have better coverage 24/7. And so at that time, they realized, oh, wow, you know, nothing's documented. We can't tap each other on the shoulder anymore. This is really hard. We need more knowledge management. And then in 2020, when Shopify went remote, we realized, oh, now everyone is experiencing that same issue because now everyone is remote and distributed and, you know, we're growing really fast and all those good things. So we really took our efforts organizational wide and really started looking at our systems and what do we need to be the best digital by design company in the world. So I've been very involved in looking at all those efforts. But all that to say, Shopify has had such a strong knowledge sharing culture from day one. That's why I was so excited to work there. Back in 2015, when we had offices, there was big signs on the wall that said, do things, tell people. So it's really been just leveraging those strengths and building up the infrastructure to support those good intentions with the right systems and structures to ensure we're doing our best.
I love how you said that, building up the infrastructure to support good intentions. That's KM in a nutshell. Well done. So let's talk about a couple of these elements. The one that you mentioned is about taking one of the groups in Shopify and actually helping it become remote pre-pandemic, if I understood that correctly.
That's right.
So this is a great example of how if you do KM well in an organization, if you invest in it, you might not know what's coming, but you're going to be more prepared for it, right? So that experience of making that remote work transition easy, better, supported for those folks helped you learn how to do it for the rest of the organization when it became a surprise. Can you tell our listeners more about that whole experience and frankly, what lessons you applied when it came to the pandemic?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we began our first initial pass at knowledge management pre-pandemic for the support team, there was a lot of content everywhere. It wasn't that nothing had been written down. It's that there had been a lot of, you know, hopeful attempts to get this started. And then because it was no one's main job, no one was maintaining it, you know, things kind of fell apart. So it was all about just organizing what was there before we started creating anything new or even implementing new tools or anything like that. I wanted to have a good baseline to start from. So it was all about getting that content up to date and making sure people knew it was up to date so that they could trust it. There was a whole exercise in building awareness to what was there and that it was trusted, it was being maintained, and you could rely on it. And that was like my soapbox campaign of 2015, 2016. If you saw me in the halls, no matter what you wanted to talk to me about, I was going to tell you, hey, did you know that our content is 95% up to date? Isn't that great news? You know, so just constantly sharing where we were at and using that momentum to build out more. And we did that before implementing tools. People often look at tools as this shiny bullet. Oh, we'll get the right tool and then everything else will come into play. And I firmly don't agree with that. I think that the content is what really matters. You need to make sure that it's answering people's questions. It's there for them when they need it. It gives them the information they need to do their jobs. And then you can use the technology to enhance that process. So that is what we did. And some of the lessons that we passed on when we started looking at this more organizational wide is really one and of the same. You know, I know a lot of organizations are jumping forward on you know, oh, we need new chat tools, we need new search tools, we need all this stuff. And some of that stuff's great and it will sure. help, you know. But if you don't have a good why for what you're doing, meaning what is our North Star? Where are we going with these whole knowledge management efforts? And how will you know when you get there? And we really need to make sure the content we had out there was up to date. So one of the biggest things we did was we built a bot to help people manage their content and to let them know, hey, this content is a little stale and you might want to go in there and get it up to date, just so that people had that reminder and that nudge. And through that, we can kind of get the right behavior. So that was the only real technical enhancement we've made so far.
I like it. Is that just based on date? If it's been 6 months since something was created, or is it more about how frequently it's been accessed? I mean, how deep do you go with the analytics around the bot?
Right now, it's just based on date. That was where we want to start and just get a proof of concept and make sure that we could get people to engage and to do the right behaviors. And then as we go, we definitely want to get a little bit more sophisticated with it and look at, has your content been accessed? Has it not? Is this something that maybe should be archived? But that's in the future.
So there are a lot of these bots, as you call it, or different automated processes that ask content owners to reconsider whether their content should be refreshed or should still be available. What question do you ask? I'm always curious about this because there's two ways these can work. One is for the bot to show up and say, hey, you created this a year ago. Should it still be here? If you don't reply, it's going away. The other is, hey, you created this a year ago. Is it still valid? I'm going to assume that it is unless you tell me to take it away. I'm always curious which angle an organization takes on that.
Yeah, we ask them to either verify it or delete it. So they get a little button and they can choose either or. And then if we don't get a response, we typically, you know, we'll follow up and then we'll assess the content and we may delete it. I think we've deleted maybe over 100 pages since we started the bot.
Good. So there's that real follow-up of saying, if you ignore this, your stuff might go away. I think that's really powerful. Now, you said we. Tell our listeners about your team. I think you've actually built out quite the infrastructure, right?
Yes, that's right. So we have a knowledge management services team. And so that team has two parts. There is a projects part, and these are KM specialists who are working on content migrations. They're working on information architecture to improve discoverability. They're working with teams to update content, create content, embed good knowledge management practices. And we also have built out a whole offering for individuals. So, you know, how to tame your Gmail and your Slack and how to improve your Google Drive. So really KM for the person. And what we've seen is when we get certain people really invested in that, then it starts to spread out and they want to organize more Google Drives and, you know, improve more processes and things like that. So that's one area of focus. And then we have a team of technical writers that do embed with teams to produce more technical and in-depth documentation. Some examples of that are, you know, things we have to produce for auditors, or we have a few folks who oversee handbooks of craft knowledge for different disciplines within our R&D team. And so they work to edit content, but also curate it and organize it and ensure that it's being used. So two different focuses. And then thirdly, we still have a huge, wonderful team that works on our support content. So that's where we started. That's our biggest client, I would say. And we do a lot for them. Obviously, with Shopify's product growing and changing constantly, there's a lot of content to keep up to date, ensure it's getting to the right people so that they can support our merchants. So that's a big operation.
Excellent. So is that content that goes directly to external users, the merchants, or is it for your own agents to then leverage to support them?
So one of the first initiatives that I undertook when I joined Shopify was to create a go-to-market product release process for the support organization. So we have a team that is called the Product Support Network. And they embed with product, understand what's coming down the pipeline, and then they start creating a care package. And that care package goes to KM. It also goes to our documentation teams. It goes to marketing and whoever else needs it so that we can all get ready based on the same source of truth and ensure that we can support the business with the new feature or product. So it kind of goes throughout the organization and gets updated customer facing as well as internally.
That's perfect. So that's pretty incredible though. I mean, what we're talking about is one set of content or one set of processes that's actually impacting externally facing content, your customers, so to speak, yeah. Your internal users, your agents. How are you measuring the efficacy of your work? What are the analytics that say I'm doing a good job?
One of the main ones is, did we get the content out on time before the product launched?
That's always a good one.
Yeah, we have a philosophy that we will not slow down product for any sort of operational activity. So we really want to make sure that our time to market is as quick as possible and that we're not slowing them down. So that speed is actually a really important metric. And then we do look at, okay, are people completing the training? We get some kind of satisfaction metrics from the training. Did this answer your questions? Yes or no? But then on the other side of the product launch, it's not done and dusted at that point in time. So then we do a postmortem and we look at, okay, what kind of customer tickets are coming in about this new product or feature? What issues are coming up? Is there feedback that needs to be addressed by R&D, by the product team? So yeah. They need to make some fixes. And so if so, that feedback goes to them. Or is it, oh, you know what? People are just kind of unclear about this flow. We need to improve customer-facing documentation, or we need to retrain or make some updates for our support advisors. So that whole feedback loop still comes into play, which is, it's manual, but it is an important practice that we've been doing for a while. And it definitely has helped us keep up the quality bar. It's always an iteration.
First of all, I think that's great. There are some of these things that, yeah, you could automate that to a certain extent, but that human set of eyes is really critical for that sort of analysis. You mentioned training as part of the loop, and I am seeing this more and more where KM and learning and development and performance are bleeding together. Can you tell us how you, as director of KM, interface with Shopify's learning group?
Yeah. So for the support team, there was a time when we were all the same. The support learning development team was actually a part of my team. And then when we decided to move our kind of knowledge management practice more organization-wide, we made some changes to the team structure. But we still work very closely with them. And so there's that whole flow of, okay, there's content that needs to go through training that needs to be disseminated through a training module. But then that content also needs to show up in the knowledge base and they need to be the same. So it requires a lot of coordination and collaboration there. And then for our learning team that's more organizational wide, we're building those same relationships and working with them and helping them do content audits, seeing what content's out there, how do we get this updated? And so there's a lot of collaboration and work going back and forth depending on the needs and, you know, how much effort's required and all those things.
Got it. Sounds very collegial. You know, going down that path a little bit, Dana, one of the questions that I often get is, where does knowledge management sit within an organization? So can you describe where you sit, who you report to, but then also more the makeup of your team? My sense is that there are a lot of people, many of them are probably distributed, sitting in different parts of the business and have kind of a dotted line to you. Can you go into all that a little bit?
Yeah, I can share a little bit. So Shopify is a growing, changing organization. So there's always a lot.
I'll ask you again in 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So right now we're actually within our talent operations group. And we made that decision because we wanted to really build out both for talent as well as for our organization-wide more KM efforts. And so we're in that group right now to just kind of foster that collaboration and be in the discussions that are more Shopify-wide rather than just support-focused. But I'm at a lot of tables. I'm in a lot of conversations. So we go where there's effort and where we've kind of made some momentum. And then we just kind of build off that momentum and have service. So we're doing huge work with our revenue team, as well as our legal team, as well as talent and all these other groups. So we're kind of in a lot of different pockets.
Got it. So Dana, you've taken what I would refer to as a content first approach to knowledge management, which I really appreciate what you said earlier. The technology is cool, but if you don't get the content right, then who cares, right? If you got a great search engine and all it's surfacing is a bunch of old, outdated, duplicate, redundant stuff, boo. So the trick that I've seen with the content first approach is that it's really kind of monotonous at first. It's hard to focus on content. It's hard to get business stakeholders cleaning up content or reformatting it or doing this or that. How did you inspire your colleagues to get this right? You said 95% of your stuff, to use a very technical term, is at this point up to date. How did you do that?
Yeah, so my first hire into our knowledge management team was someone who had a writing background, but had been doing the work for over a year and understood the challenges. So it was someone who is a subject matter expert in the efforts, but also it was someone who had gone to school for journalism. He understood good writing and he could really make a dent in what needed to happen. And I think that sometimes we think, okay, well, I need to hire like knowledge management people, or I need to hire technical writers, and all of those people are great. And I've hired many of them myself, but to start, I think getting a subject matter expert and putting a little fence around them and making sure that they can just focus on the content is a really great way to start and build momentum. And now, 7 years later, that person is not creating content, right? We have all the proper business practices for people to create their own content, subject matter experts, updated, all those things. But to really get started and to create that baseline of good content, that was how you began. And that's always how I will start those projects going forward.
Awesome. Now, that makes it sound like your internal team was doing the cleanup and doing the writing. Did you engage the business, the other folks within Shopify, in that cleanup process as well, or did you really carry the water?
No, we did. We did engage with people, subject matter experts. And as we made progress and we built that awareness, we had people coming to us and saying, how can I get involved? And there were certain teams that just got into it and they liked having their trust score high, and they liked that became a point of pride for them. And so we really talked about, like, you don't need to swim upstream, right? So wherever there is people that are enthusiastic, like, bring those in, make them your tribe, and just leverage those efforts, because it'll elevate everything.
Nice. You mentioned awareness, and you talked earlier about how you were walking the halls and screaming from the rooftops about content cleanup and percentages. How did you build that awareness, and how did you leverage that trust score to get everybody in line?
Yeah, there's a quote that I really like, which is, awareness is the greatest agent for change. I think it's Eckhart Tolle. But it was just, any time I was given an opportunity to address the team, that's what I was going to talk about. I never let an opportunity pass me by to talk about what we were doing, the progress we had made, and what steps were coming next. And so if we were doing a leadership conference, you know, I was putting up my hand to share that. If we were doing, you know, we have our internal hack days projects, which are times for us to work on things maybe outside of our day to day, but this is outside and inside and all around my day to day. So I would do that work. And then I would get, you know, other opportunities to share with a broader audience what we were doing. And I made sure it was clear to people when they were looking at the content, they could see where we were at as well. It wasn't just word of mouth or through presentations. It was also, there's indicators on the content that people could see so they could understand what they were looking at and that it was up to date.
Excellent. So going back to the content cleanup process, can you tell us a little bit more about this? So you brought in the right people, and obviously having the right people in the room with the right expertise is a big part of this. Maybe a little bit about how you prioritized what content to do first and what the process looked like. Was it just about text? Was it content? Was it formatting? Was it tagging, enhancement? Like, when you say this piece of content has now gone through the process, what does that mean?
So we looked at, where were we getting the most contacts from our customers? Because this work was really for our support advisors at that time. So what was the most high priority content? Where were we getting the most contacts? What was difficult for people to understand? And then we were making sure that we were addressing that first with cleaning it up. So making sure it's well organized, well formatted, it looked good too. Like, if the content looks good, it's a little bit more trustworthy and believable than if it's all messy and hard to understand. And then we would also have subject matter review as well. So we would try and do the work, pull in the content from all the different places, get it to a point where we thought it was complete, it was, you know, it looked good, it was well organized, and then we would get subject matter to review that to make sure that they agreed with the content, they didn't feel anything was missing, and then that went up on the site, and there'd be that last updated date, would be a recent date, and we would just make sure that we were constantly updating and verifying that once it was part of our, like, clean content collection.
A lot of that speaks to the individual pieces of content, how about kind of the findability and discoverability? Once it goes back up on the site, how do you ensure or test that the right people are finding it and able to act upon it?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, because that's an important part of the process. So actually, one of the first things we did was align on our information architecture, and we mirrored that with how our calls were coming in and being tagged by our support advisors. So we leveraged both the tagging within the system as well as our help center system to have the same information architecture. So that way, that also helped us measure, okay, how many contacts are coming in, what analytics are we seeing on the page, are we making any sort of difference with call times or customer satisfaction based on these efforts, which both improved throughout our efforts. And so we were able to kind of pull a bunch of things together by mirroring that information architecture, just made it a lot easier to measure our efforts.
And that's a great approach. It's amazing that more organizations don't take that approach. It can be different levels of granularity. Yeah. But why not use the same core vocabulary, the same starting points, and the same paths? If it works for one type of person, it isn't necessarily going to be perfect for another, but that's where you can do some mappings and get it done. That's great. So Dana, you've obviously made great strides within the organization. What's next? What's on the roadmap for knowledge management at Shopify?
Yeah, we are looking at our internal knowledge base that we use across Shopify. And it's a homegrown tool. It's had a few different iterations over the years. And we're looking to take what are the best iterations of this and just leverage those strengths more fully and really embrace our developer community and environment and make sure that the tools are working for them as well as our non-technical folks. And so that's going to be a really big effort that we're still exploring this year. What will that look like? What will that entail? Time will tell, but I think it's going to be pretty exciting and deliver a much better product once we're done.
Awesome. Are you planning to stay with homegrown solution or are you going to replatform?
No, we're going to stay with our homegrown solution.
Excellent. What's driving that decision?
Yeah, there's quite a few things. So one is it's now been built into all of our other internal systems. So it's really how you manage projects. It's how you manage work. It's kind of the home site for a lot of different efforts and processes. And it's kept a lot of the Shopify culture and personality over the years. So you can give recognition to people, and that's called giving a unicorn. And when you boop the unicorn to, you know, add your recognition to that entry, there's a little confetti and little, you know, colors that change in the button. So because it's homegrown and we can have a lot of our internal folks work on it, you know, during things like hack days and things like that, there's a lot of our personality and our culture kind of embedded in how we do things. And so I love that we have that personality in there, and I'm hoping that we can kind of use that more and really give it a personality and make it feel like your coworker rather than just a tool.
Awesome. And by the way, that's a milestone for us, Dana. That's the first time the phrase boop the unicorn has been uttered on a knowledge cast. So thank you for that. You hit on two things there that I think are really cool and great answers. The first is integration. When it comes to what would be considered a knowledge management technology, integration is so important. If you're building another tool in a silo, you're really not building a KM tool. So that concept that it's wired together with all of the other things that people do at Shopify, with all the other places where knowledge lives or information lives, I think is really great. But even more so the culture. If the tool reflects the way that you want the culture to be and the way that it should be within the organization, that if people feel comfortable within it, why change it? So I think that's fantastic. Let's go back to a question about culture. You mentioned that before you even really rolled up your sleeves there, there was a poster on the wall that said, "Do things, tell people," which is very cool. That suggests pretty clearly that there's a great culture of knowledge sharing within the organization, that there's some leadership support. Talk to us a little bit more about that. Has that always been within the organization? Was it something that was really kind of owned or driven by one or two individuals? How did it come to be and how is it sustained?
The culture was what really drew me to Shopify. And I know that's the same for a lot of people. So before I joined, there was these posters that said, "Do things, tell people." And that really came from our executive team. They really wanted to build a fast-growing organization. We had a lot to do. We were very hungry for it. And they saw that as a way for us to be more effective and to work better together by sharing what you've learned. And a lot of the Do Things Tell People has produced people sharing what they've learned and really helping out their colleagues through that sharing. When I joined Shopify, I was so impressed that you can message anyone and say, hey, can we, you know, have a coffee chat, or hey, can I pick your brain on this? And I've never had anyone say no. You know, maybe they're like, oh, really busy right now, can we do it in 2 weeks? You know, but in general, there's a really helpful culture. Everyone wants to share. They want to help each other. And so I've always said, we just need to maintain that. We need to keep that going. And so we've continued to engage in those activities. We have a weekly town hall that's led by our COO, and he's curating stories across Shopify and having those shared. He's sharing stories from our customers, and we're celebrating those. There's a lot of really good storytelling that happens at Shopify. And so there's a lot of good examples for people to see coming from the top that then that demonstrates, okay, this is the proper way to engage here. And that's what I should follow along. So there's a number of different activities, different rituals, different ways of showing up that have all kind of promoted that knowledge sharing. And my job has really just been to, like I said before, follow along and build the infrastructure. So like, okay, we can find these stories later and we can write them down and use them again and all that good stuff.
I love the power of storytelling in all hands meetings and in building culture. But I also love the power of celebration. And it sounds like there's a real celebratory culture there. What's your favorite, other than booping the unicorn, what's your favorite like way that Shopify celebrates its people and its successes?
There's so many that come to mind. A lot of them are in office experiences. But even last week, we had our annual summit. And the one thing that carries through from like our in-person experiences to our digital experience has been a real attention to detail and a very deliberate way of celebrating and acting out these celebrations. And so I'm thinking to our first party that I attended, which was to celebrate our IPO. And there was a theme, there were people, it was game day, and there were people serving food in like the trays, like you would see it like a baseball game, we all got baseball hats, like everything was thought of. And it was really intentional and just makes it feel so much more special than like, hey, we're all going to have some beers after work or something like that. Right. So it was really impressionable on me. And I've just seen that carry through everything that we've done.
Very cool. Now, you're also working on a book or are about to publish a book.
Yes,
that's right. Can you tell everybody about that?
Yeah, so it's actually been published. It came out in September of last year. And you'll see that my passion for culture really came through here because it's the Handbook of Research on Organizational Culture Strategies for Effective Knowledge Management and Performance. And so this was really inspired by my experience at Shopify and seeing how important culture is to successful knowledge management and reflecting on different experiences I've had and seeing where the culture was the challenge. And that was why certain things maybe weren't successful because, you know, the time wasn't ripe based on certain culture elements that we did or did not have. And so I was the author and editor of this book. I also worked with a number of wonderful authors across the world to include different research coming out of lessons learned or leadership, different ways of working through different cultures and different culture types so that your knowledge management strategy really fits with where you are and you have a better chance at success than if you kind of ignore those culture elements.
Awesome. And for our listeners, look for the link. And Dana's also been kind enough to offer us a discount code. So we'll put that on the podcast page as well. So check that out back at the EK website. Tell us a little bit more about who the intended reader is and what you really hope for people to not just take away, but act on as a result of having read it.
The intended reader is really a mix of practitioners as well as academics. It is kind of more of an academic book, but I also worked with a variety of authors. So I worked with some practitioners as well as some more traditional academics to really bring about just holistically research that will help understand the theory and the foundations, but then really bring that all the way through to the practice and give you some really important takeaways. So one of the first chapters in the book by Leland Holmquist talks about, you know, how do we motivate people to engage in knowledge management? And it really talks about the motivations and what taking from positive psychology and understanding how people think, how they feel, and what will really motivate them, which is really fantastic. And then we move into a chapter that I wrote about this new digital world that we find ourselves in. How do we share knowledge in a remote setting? And really, how do we build trust? And what does trust building look like in remote settings? And how do we get there? And what are the challenges? So each chapter, you know, starts with the foundation, the psychology or the background or the theory, and then moves towards like, okay, these are some practical things that you can take forward. And that carries through, that structure carries through all the chapters in the book.
Sounds great. Thank you for sharing that. Dana, as we come to the close here, I've got a couple kind of short questions for you, sure, just to kind of make sure that we're completing the loop. The first is this: if there's one piece of advice that you want to offer to our listeners and to the organizations in which they work, what must an organization do to really be successful with KM?
I think that organizations need a why. They need that North Star that will guide them when things get bumpy. So what is it all for? Is it to improve organizational effectiveness? Is it to improve quality or customer satisfaction? Is it to improve safety? There's a lot of organizations who safety is a huge priority with their knowledge management initiatives. But what is it? And can we make sure that everyone that's engaging understands that that's what our goal is? And that can really help drive momentum in that direction.
And then last question, what's that one piece of career advice for those listeners that are towards the beginning of their career that want to be Dana when they grow up? What would you say to them?
I think we kind of circled around it when we were talking about how I ended up in the position I'm in right now, is looking for those gaps and helping close them. So I really think making sure your activities are tied to business priorities and you're making the business better, then the rest will follow. So, you know, I've been a knowledge management practitioner, but I've worked on a number of different teams and activities and things over the years. I've managed things that you'd probably say, based on my background, I have no business doing, but that never really stopped me. And I just use, you know, the knowledge management practices to guide me and to improve whatever operational problem we were having. And at the end, it's like, hey, we made it better. And people are always really happy with that.
That's great. Well, Dana Tessier, Director of Knowledge Management at Shopify, thank you so much for your time. Great conversation. To our listeners, thanks for joining us for this episode of KnowledgeCast. And to check out more information on knowledge management, as well as to get the link to Dana's book and discount code, visit our website at enterprise-knowledge.com. Thanks, everybody.